Hey everyone, Brian from All They Ruck Off here, and today's podcast episode is with Tim Galloway. He's back. This time we're talking GoRuck Selection. Tim was flown down to shoot the GoRuck Selection event. I know that he's wanted to photograph that event for a long time, and so I'm really excited to have him on to talk about his experience down there. I was really excited that he was willing to come back on and talk because I've had a lot of finishers on from GoRuck Selection in the past. I've had a lot of cadre on who were at GoRuck Selection, ran the event, but I think this is the first time that I've had someone on who was at GoRuck Selection, but kind of on the sidelines. They weren't directly participating as a participant or as a cadre. So he offers a very unique perspective there that I think you're going to enjoy. Tim, thank you so much again for coming back on the show. Really appreciate you taking the time. I had a lot of fun with this one. You're listening to the All Day Ruck Off podcast, episode number 127. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. Thank you so much for the support. It's truly appreciated. There is some swearing in this episode, so if you have kids in the car, just note that. And I really hope that you enjoy this episode where we talk about GoRuck Selection Class 021. Today, I'm talking to Tim Galloway. Really excited to have him back on the podcast. Last time he was on, we talked about photography, shooting GoRuck events, and being a shadow. This time, we're talking about GoRuck Selection because he was out there doing a ton of photography, a ton of work for the event. I'll let him get into all that. I'm really excited to have him on for this because I've had cadre for GoRuck on in the past to talk about selection, and they've been heavily involved. I've had people who have taken part and finished the event on to talk about it. And I think this is the first time who I've had someone on who's kind of been on the outside observing everything from a different lens to talk about GoRuck Selection. So Tim, thank you again for making the time. How you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me back on the chat. I wasn't really expecting to talk again this soon, but you know, I'm stoked on it. It's great.
I wasn't expecting us to talk again this soon either. I remembered when we talked last time, you had mentioned that you were hoping to be out there for selection, and then I saw you in the live coverage. I was like, he's there. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was definitely one of the events that I wanted to really, you know, be there and like make sure that I had, you know, that I was able to go do that. And I've wanted to shoot selection for 5 years, essentially since I knew about it, and like since I've been shadowing events, like I was like, man, I want to be there. So being able to go this year was kind of, it was like a, I don't want to say a dream come true, but I mean, that's super cliche, but it was definitely a defining, you know, thing. It was, you know, able to just like it is for people to be able to go and participate or even more so finish. It was one of those things where it's like, man, like I wanted to do it. And so I put in the work and like, I'm here to do it. So it was really cool to do.
It is really cool. And I mean, it's one of those events where you have to be invited to shoot it.
Oh yeah, there's no possible way that you would be out there shadowing, making photos of the event without HQ, you know, wanting you there. Like, you know, the beginning, you know, everybody's like dumping rocks and they're doing admin and all that stuff at the very beginning. There's, you know, there's shadows, but other than that, like you know, the access to it is super limited. And you know, of course, throughout selection, a lot of finishers were showing up, and you know, their significant others and families and stuff would kind of like flex on and off and come in and out. Other than that, like there's no access. This is not a tough where you can show up and just kind of hang out with everyone. Like it's not that type of environment, and it's not that type of event. So you know, in especially in like photojournalism, like where my background is. The biggest thing is access. So having the access to selection is really, really unique and really, really special. So I was, you know, really happy that I was able to come out for GoRuck and do that. And it's really important to me that they trusted me,
you know, and believed in my work for me to come out and do that for them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that says a lot. And I mean, we saw it in the live coverage. Pretty much the only people there who weren't cadre participants or the people photographing and, you know, shooting video of the event were prior year selection finishers, and they've kind of, you know, earned it to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all that there was. It was, you know, I've said it before where, you know, I've had, you know, as somebody who's working for GORUCK, I have the access of the cadre, but none of the influence. So it's very much that, where it's previous finishers, and that's and cadre and participants, and that's it. So it was a really, it was kind of intimate, you know. It's like it's just that team out there, and you know, marketing team was there, you know. So there were folks from HQ that are behind the scenes that were there, but not actively like in proximity with what was happening, but more so just, you know, monitoring live feeds and answering questions and getting posts out and stuff like that. It was a world-class production. Like what they, you know, there is a lot of work and a lot of hours and a lot of skill and expertise that goes into bringing that to the community. And somebody might just think like, hey, you know what, it's, you know, big deal is Jason on his, you know, on an iPhone just showing us video, but it's way more in depth than that.
Yeah, I would be really interested if GORUCK ever put out a making of selection documentary or something that just shows behind the scenes how much work actually goes into that event. Because when you kind of hear about the event or you look at it on paper, I mean, they really don't need that much there. Sandbags, whatever apparatuses that they require the participants to have. Participants bring their ruck and then the cadre to run it. But there's just so much extra behind the scenes, you know, so much extra additional work that goes into it that that'd be really interesting to sometime for them to show that.
Well, you know, it's like watching a duck on the water, right? Like you can be watching a duck on a lake and the lake will be totally smooth and the duck's just kind of like cruising along. So on the surface, it looks like the duck's just moving, like doing a thing, but underneath is all the action, right? His feet, like the duck's feet are going crazy. It's like what it's using to propel the duck across the surface, right? So there's all this momentum and energy and stuff that's going on, you know, behind the scenes. So they provided me with, you know, the run of the show, essentially, like the whole list of, I knew what every single movement was. I knew what every single evolution was, the time frame for it. Like I had this massive like list, and dude, I couldn't even get my head around it because there are so many parts with cadre flexing on and off, you know, making sure that all the candidates are safe, making sure that there are opportunities for them to hydrate if something happens, for them to get checked out, whatever, and then have all these like moving parts. So it's, you know, okay, when are cadre coming on and off? When are they running their tests? How is it being switched up? Like, is there anything happening on the fly that's changing? There's so many moving parts to it that it's really just, it's mind bending all the work that they have to put into it to make it seem like, yeah, cool, cadre are here, candidates are here, just, you know, beat the shit out of them and go. It's like, it's way more than that.
Because that's what it looks like from our end, you know, the cadre at the clipboard and go.
Yeah. It's not that at all. There is so much to it.
I think that's a testament to their events department that they can do all of that and make it look so effortless, relatively speaking.
Absolutely. It's everything is planned. Everything that happens is already like figured out, pre-configured. Like they know what's happening. And, you know, and if there's, for instance, there was a, someone, Hurtado, was kind of behind. It was like midday. When they were pulling those pendulums, those things were looked terrible. So when they were dragging those pendulums all around, Hurtado fell behind a bit. And so they were working on getting the candidates to the next evolution. So what they did was they had Cody doing loops on the island with the other candidates while they waited for Hurtado. So they had to have like a plan, like, okay, what are we going to do? You know, if they get separated, what if there's a lot of like having to adjust on the fly but also adhere to the timeline that's already been laid out for the event. So because, you know, as you know, as one thing that you do see is the maintaining of the standard. The standard needs to be maintained. So with that, that includes making time, making evolutions, and all this other stuff. So it's like they also have the standard to maintain. It's not just the candidate. It's the event. The event has to maintain the standard. And behind the event is all of the planning to maintain that standard.
I think that's just a great way to describe it. I don't think I could have even come close. But the only way for the participants to maintain the standard is for the event to maintain the standard. And the only way for that to happen is for all of that planning and preparation.
Correct. I mean, if you think of it like, we all know that before you have an event in whatever city that you're going to, that you're in, the cadre come in and they do recon and they check out the city and they figure out their route. They plan out, you know, how much mileage, they plan out, you know, where they're going, when they're going there. So they find, people in the city that they have contacts with, so they can go to a gym or a box or something to add an element to it. So the cadre do that for a tough, right? Like, so they put that into it. So now take that and then extrapolate that to selection. So where the standards are more strict, where they do have performance drops, where they have specific evolutions. So it's a similar planning, but elevated.
That makes total sense.
So, and granted, this is all from the paperwork that I've seen and from being behind the scenes a little bit with them. So I wasn't there for any of the planning. I wasn't there for any of their discussion. I was there strictly as part of the media. However, from everything that I had seen, like, there's no other way that it would happen. There's simply no way that it could have. It wasn't just magic. It wasn't just like, we'll just do it this way. Like, it wasn't fly by the seat of the pants. It was serious, hard work and thought and planning.
Yeah, I mean, we don't live in a fantasy world. That was what I was going to say. There's no way this stuff just comes to be. You're not doing the long walk, you know, at what, 2-3 in the morning, and oh, here's a fully lit CrossFit box because
surprise! Oh, we didn't know this was here. How weird.
Yeah.
No, not at all. Definitely coordinated. 100%.
For all of that stuff to come together, I can only imagine.
Yeah, it's mind-bending. Like, when it comes to planning like that, my brain just doesn't work well. Like, I can get timelines and I can get, like, people can tell me exactly where to be, when to be there, and they can tell me exactly what's going to happen. For me, like, the way my brain works is I just need to know where to be and when. Otherwise, if you're telling me, like, who's moving here and doing this, like, it doesn't, my eyes glaze over. So for them, like, I have, like, huge respect for the people that can, like, organize that and, like, you know, all the folks at HQ to put all that together. Like, that makes zero sense to me. It's kind of just, in my case, it's like, this is where you're going to be, this is when you need to be there, and point me in the direction and I shoot.
You've got the definitely the talent for shooting. Some of those pictures that you took were just amazing. So I'm glad that they've done all of that heavy lifting for you so that they can just tell you where to go and then they can let you just be you. You don't have to plan any of their stuff out.
Yeah. You know, and it was, you know, the media team there is great. They have their shit together. And it was really nice meeting everybody at HQ. Like, it was really cool to be able to put, you know, faces to the names. A lot of the folks I hadn't met, I had met Nick before. We shadowed the 9/11 HTL together this year in New York. But, you know, meeting the other folks that were behind, you know, like Megan, and who does, you know, their social, like, Instagram stuff, and Andy, who is essentially, like, the lead of that department, and Kendra, like, it was really cool, like, meeting all of them and kind of, like, seeing how they work together and how they look at things and how they, like, they put things together, because that's something that I don't do. You know, I just kind of make photos and I put stuff out on, you know, whenever. I mean, it's something I need to be better at, but something I just, you know, I don't do that planning and social media and all this stuff. I just put stuff up when I put it up. But it was really cool to see, like, they're clearly an intelligent, well-operating, you know, media group that really helps propel GoRuck.
Yeah. The amount of logistics behind that. I have a hard enough time as it is operating a Facebook page, an Instagram account, and a Twitter account. And there, you know, getting even like one update out a day or something. And they've got the perfectly sequenced updates with the Facebook page running the live feed. Everything's timely and it looks good. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that.
I have a very strong sense of pride when it comes to, you know, like I was noticing a lot of the comments coming across social media, like on Instagram, at least, while I was out shooting. And you know, a lot of people were really surprised by like the quality of the images and how fast they're getting turned around. And you know, that is partially, you know, Nick and I on the ground making images. Nick's really good at what he does. I'm pretty good at what I do. And then you have the media team that's up and working and posting all this stuff. And, you know, technology enables us to do this. So Nick and I are both able to transmit images directly to our phones and process the images on our phones to some level and then send them out, which is how we were able to continue, like, have essentially like a live, almost like a live feed with images on Instagram. So it was a concerted effort where we all had, you know, a part of it, and that, you know, if we wouldn't have all done it the way we did it, it wouldn't have come together like it had.
It's crazy technology these days. Are you still shooting on Sony?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The technology is amazing.
Yeah, I remember I used to shoot film and then went Nikon, and now I'm over on Sony, and I think you and I have a couple similar cameras, and I mean, you can pull up the photo, you can send it, you can get it on your phone in under a minute. No problem. Get that thing on there and sent off. And I mean, just the rate of speed between taking cans of film to the drugstore to get processed versus boom, perfect picture to your phone, done.
Yeah, I learned on film, which I'm really grateful that I did, because I think it really helps me shoot now, because I didn't have an LCD with a fucking tractor beam attached to it. So I don't have to chimp. If, you know, I can actually just shoot and leave images in my camera and not look at them every time I take a photo. But yeah, the ability to instantly transmit an image is absolutely incredible. However, it can be really dangerous. I had, after the end of the weekend, I had over 1,000 images that I transferred from my cameras to my phone. And I don't even know how many I sent via text, via data. I smashed all of my data on the weekend for the whole month. So like it was, we were sending a lot of data, and you know, they had a lot of images to use. I mean, like I was looking through Facebook the other day and just seeing like their, the timeline uploads, and there are tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of photos from selection that all of those that you see, well, those are all sent via data, like on cell phones.
Well, I know I appreciate it. I'm sure the rest of the GRT community appreciates you going big on your data plan for us.
Yeah, I sacrificed my data for the community. all to tell the tale of Go Ruck Jesus.
Man, so how far in advance of this event did you know that you were going to be going down there to shoot it?
I found out pretty soon after I finished shadowing the 9/11 HDL in New York. They have me essentially kind of like on a 30-day loop-ish, where I find out maybe a month or so in advance of the events that I'm going to shoot. So like right now, my next event is I'm going to shoot the Tun Tavern Tough in Philly, in a couple weeks or in a week or week and a half or whatever it is on the 9th. So, and then I usually get, you know, a little bit of notification before I go. So I've known about selection for a little while. And then before I even went to shoot, the HTL in New York, I was telling Nick, I'm like, dude, I want to shoot that event. Like, you guys want me down there, I promise.
And I'm sure they're glad to have you, because those photos, I mean, you can't really tell. I can't tell. Probably you can tell, because you know which ones you shot, and you and Nick probably have your own, you know, stylistic preferences, but just the quality of photos that was coming through is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick does not shoot like I do. Like we have completely different ways of shooting.
And I think that when we shoot something together, they really complement each other. Because I think Nick is very much in the mind of shooting for a business, for a company. I mean, and I am too. However, Nick pays way more attention than I do to stuff like product. He pays way more attention to how the GORUCK stuff is being used during the event. He pays way more attention to making sure that he gets a photo of each person that's in the event. He works his ass off during events, and you know he's always doing shuttle runs and stuff during events to make sure that he can run up in front of the group and try to get a photo of every single person in that group. So that way, when they do the Facebook dump of all the photos, like people can go through and say, "Oh, cool, well, there's the one of me." So that's how Nick works, and I don't work like that at all. So I look for specifically like composition for action. For emotion, stuff like that. My brain doesn't work, and you know when I'm shooting, it doesn't work like, oh, you know what, I better make sure to get every single person that's here. For me, it's like, oh man, this person's putting in some weight. They're under a sandbag. They've got a solid poop face going. Like I'm working that right now. Or you know, there's some really good light going on. Like their headlamps look good, or something like that. That's how I kind of approach it. So when we're combined, I think there's a really good mixture of peak action, of people who are, you know, participating, of product, of environment. And, you know, I think it's a really good combination.
I'm glad that you dove into that because it makes a lot of sense. And it's really interesting to hear about because it's, you know, it's your eye, what you have an eye for and what you're looking for. That's usually what you end up shooting. And so it's it'd be interesting to go through the pictures and guess who shot what based off that description.
You should definitely be able to tell. Like if you were to really sit down and look, you would know which ones are his and which ones are mine. And that's just, you know, we all shoot differently, and that's one thing that I've learned over the years of making photos as a professional is that. You can't go into an assignment or a job or a gig or whatever thinking, oh, I'm going to shoot like this. And because it doesn't work that way. Because if you have a client that says, you know what, this is what I want. This is how I want it shot. That's fine. But at the same time, it's like you shoot the way you shoot. And there's nothing wrong with pushing boundaries and like learning and shooting, like, you know, forcing yourself to shoot in a different way. But the time, it's not the time to do it when you're working for somebody. So it's why you have like meetings, it's why you have portfolios, because it's like, here's my work. This is how I shoot. This is what you should expect. You should expect to see images that are similar to this when I shoot for you, because then you have the, like, you know, like for instance, you go shoot a wedding and if I shoot a wedding, I always meet with a couple beforehand and I go over my portfolio with them. Because it's highly important that they know that, like, this is how I shoot. And if they're looking for something different, they should find a different photographer. Because I'm not going to change how I shoot for them. So it's the same thing for GORUCK, where it's, you know, this is how I shoot. This is what I've shot before. And, you know, they had, like, direct, you know, they had examples. Like, my portfolio had examples that applied directly to them because I was shooting GORUCK events. You know, this is how I shoot. This is the way I shoot it. And that's the way it is. So then they say, this is good, let's go. So they're not expecting anything different than what I provide.
I mean, one of the ways that I've kind of thought about it and can kind of explain it to people, it's like restaurants, right? Like you don't mm-hmm. go to a barbecue place and you tell them, you know, what I really want.
Give me some Szechuan chicken.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm throwing a wedding and I need sushi. You're like, bud, this is Joe's barbecue.
You're a Burger King. Like, y'all got any of those gorditas? Like, no. It's like, you ever see the Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia?
I have not.
Okay, it's about Jesco White, who is like the dancing outlaw, and Hank Williams III, Hank III is like kind of like associated with him, but he's a character. If you look him up, you'll get a good laugh. But there's this part in the documentary where the family is going through the drive through at Taco Bell and she's like, y'all got any of those mozzarella cheese sticks? You have to know, you know, you can't expect something that, you know, from someone that they just don't produce.
Yep. And if they ended up having them, they probably wouldn't be any good because that's, you know, not what they specialize in.
Correct. 100%.
So I agree. I think that's why, you know, looking at portfolios is so important when you're choosing a photographer or when you're, you know, looking into hiring someone, because it's almost that level of difference. You don't, yeah.
It's the entire reason why portfolios and CVs and resumes exist.
And menus.
Because I'm not gonna hire somebody that has, you know, 20 years of construction experience to make a painting of my dog.
Yep.
I'm gonna hire somebody who's a painter to make a painting of my dog. You know.
Absolutely. So you heard from GoRuck. You're gonna be shooting selection. Leading up to the event, were you nervous at all to go out and do it, or were you excited? You know, how are you feeling?
Yeah. Both.
Good.
So we had a conversation a little earlier before we got going about how, like, I'm very introverted, and part of that kind of like goes along with my personality is I try really hard not to worry, and I also try really hard to have like to be like confident, but a lot of times it just doesn't happen. And I really, really care about what I do. And every time I go to an assignment, regardless if it's GoRuck or for a news organization or whatever, like I always get nervous because I care. And I'm always like, man, am I gonna perform? Like, am I gonna deliver what they need? Am I gonna deliver what they want? Am my client gonna be happy? Like, are they gonna be angry if I fuck up? You know, am I going to fuck up? Like, I start going through all these like scenarios in my head, like, how am I going to fuck up? And so, yeah, dude, when I found out I was shooting selection, like, I got hard as fuck. But at the same time, I was like, man, like, I'm really nervous. Like, how, like, I don't know, like, how I'm going to move. And, you know, like, and like right now, like, I'm in like terrible shape. And I was sitting at HQ before we went, and like, I was so embarrassed and ashamed of myself because I was like guaranteed the least fit person in that room. And I'm like, how am I going to keep up? How am I going to stay with, like, how am I going to stay awake? How am I going to, you know, how am I going to manage this with all these people? Like, this is like the quintessential GoRuck event. Like, how am I going to, you know, keep up? How am I going to create the images that need to be created? So yeah, of course I was nervous, man. Cause like, I wanted to make sure that, you know, that I'm doing justice to the people that are there that are participating. And I want to make sure that I'm delivering good product to my client, because I'm not a cheap photographer by any means. And I don't think that any other photographer has dared ask GoRuck pay what I've asked them to pay. So I think that, you know, that's in my mind constantly as I'm working and leading up to work, where it's like, I got to deliver. So of course, yeah, man, absolutely nervous, but absolutely excited.
That's good. And I agree. You know, when I'm working with people, I get nervous too, but it's the same thing. It's just because you care about the final product and you want to,
yeah,
it's important.
Well, if you don't deliver, then it's like, what happens next time? Is there a next time?
Exactly.
If, you know, we all have bad days for sure. And, you know, I've definitely had assignments where I've gone in and I was seeing nothing. Like, I was just like dead in the water. And I've had to call the desk of news organizations, and like, I've been on the sign, be like, hey, you know, like, I'm doing terrible today. Like, I'm gonna shoot as best I can, but like, I'm just having one of those days where I'm just not on. And you know, it happens, and it happens to everyone. So it's just one of those things where like, this event is like, and there's two other events, but this event is like the one that I cannot fuck up. So yeah, I was definitely feeling that tension.
And so in some regards, looking from being from the outside, like myself and everyone else who's watching it through the monitors, because it was live streamed, you know, the mm-hmm. energy level there seemed pretty high. And generally when there's a solid energy level, I can usually perform, you know, whatever I'm working on a little bit better. And you just kind of get excited and you get more in the moment. Did you notice when you were there, was the energy level pretty high or?
Dude, the energy there was so weird. So when you go to a standard event, like the energy level is like super pumped. Like everybody's like, yeah, you know, we're just getting ourselves into trouble. But, you know, the cadre is like rooting for us. And, you know, it's like, you know, you get people, you know, hurry up, me a cadre, like in your ear, like, you know, make your time hacks. Oh, you make your time hacks, you get punished, whatever. But it's kind of fun, right? Like, it's kind of like, you know, that it's just like, they're having fun, that at the end of it, when you make it through, you're going to get the patch, it's going to be hugs, you know, whatever. And during those events, the cadre aren't like, quit. I mean, they might do that, but it's like mostly in jest. And dude, at selection, it was completely different. The energy was like so heavy. And I've kind of like, so I'm a Harry Potter nerd. And so what I kind of equivocate the cadre to during this event are Dementors. Like, I don't know, like if you're into the Harry Potter universe at all. And for those like who will listen and don't know who the Dementors are the guards of Azkaban, which is this, you know, wizarding prison. And essentially they pull all of the happy, good, positive energy and they just suck it out and it's gone. Like when the Dementors show up, it gets really cold. Nothing feels happy. Everything feels terrible. You know, the water turns to ice. You can see your breath and, you know, they can give you the Dementor's kiss, which is they suck the soul out of your body and it doesn't kill you. You're just a body without a soul. And that's essentially what the cadre were during selection. And it was relatively terrifying. It wasn't the super loud, you know, like we're on Facebook Live, I'm going to be loud and yelling at you, you know, you're not moving 1-5, get moving 1-5. You're not making the standard. Come on 3-4, you know, do those hydro burpees. Come on, get your ruck up. It wasn't that. What it was is when they're doing bear crawls and it's dark out and you have like, it's lit by tiki torches. Mocha Mike was kind of like walking next to the candidates as they're like doing bear crawls on this swamp in Florida, and like the bugs are like swarming and everybody's just getting eaten up by mosquitoes and they're covered in mud and like they're, you know, they're already exhausted and people are just doing bear crawls or low crawls, and Mocha is just kind of like bent over just whispering sweet nothings of demise into their ears, like, you can't make it, why are you here, give up, quit. Like, you're not supposed to be here. Why are you still moving? Stop moving. Don't keep going. Like, you're on your knees. You're not even bear crawling. So like, there's no point in you being here. And it was like, just, it was quiet, but it was devastating. And that was like the scariest stuff. Like, that was when you could feel just like the energy just leaving. And it's really one of those things where you could, like, the energy, there was a definite transfer. Like, you could feel like the candidates putting everything out and then just the cadre just sucking it up. And it was a really, really interesting feeling to be there.
That's unreal.
It is.
You can kind of, you know, just how you relate it to the Dementors. You know, he's just right over there, just whispering in his ear, and you just feel the hope leaving the participant.
Yeah. It was the cadre just pulling the hope and pulling like happiness and pulling like positivity just out of the candidate, just like sucking it away. And clearly it works. Clearly it happens because the attrition rate is so incredibly high.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is.
So one of the changes that they made this year was, if you notice during the feed, is there was very little individual attention from cadre. So there was some. There wasn't none, but there was very, like, it was decreased. So there were less, you know, people getting smoked on the side by cadre because they wanted to work on maintaining the standard. They wanted it to be objective. They wanted everybody to have, you know, the same experience. So, but if cadre, like, latched on, like roster 3-4, like, dude, like, that guy, like, that was hard to watch, man. He did not quit for one. Like he did not stop going. There's a video where Jason was kind of overseeing him, and it was Kedrick Cody and 3-4, and I was there. And Jason was just like watching him trying to do hydro burpees or thrusters or something in the water, and he just wasn't performing. He had a red patch on his ruck already. He already had strikes on it, and he just wouldn't quit. And Cody's just like, look, man, you quit inside your brain, like, just quit, like, get out of here. He's like, you're trying to do you know, suicide by cadre. Like, you're just trying to get me to PD, you know, to drop you. And he wouldn't quit. And it was hard, man, because, like, he was doing everything he could, but it just wasn't there anymore. So, you know, he did, you know, the thrusters, the burpees, whatever he was doing in the water, and he just couldn't get to it. So Cody had to performance drop him. And it was like, he didn't quit. And you could just feel like he wanted it really bad, but he wasn't meeting the standard. And that was like one of the biggest things with the, I mean, it's a big thing with every selection, but with this one, like, I think they really tried to make the standard for everybody the same across the board.
Very fair.
Yeah. It's so unfair that it's very fair. And it was the same thing for Hurtado. You know, they were out doing, you know, out in the swamp and doing these rotations with the tiki torches alight and having him, you know, do different movements and stuff. And he just couldn't, you know, he couldn't rally himself to do the movements. So they gave him a performance drop. And it's not that he didn't try. He didn't quit. Like, he would have, dude, if it wouldn't have been a performance drop, he would have gone all the way through. But he wasn't meeting the standard. So I think that was a big thing for GoRuck this year, was to maintain standard.
So how did that feel being out there? Because for the people who have been investing hours and hours, and they've been, you know, they've made it halfway, and then, you know, you're out there, you know, photographing their last minutes of the event. I mean, how does that feel? Just that energy.
Well, like I said, like, you know, like 3-4 and Hurtado too. Like, it's heartbreaking, you know, and there's certain things that, you know, their minds and their hearts, like they want it so bad, but then the bodies just fail. So it's absolutely heartbreaking and gut wrenching. And, you know, it's like, I made this frame of Jala. Like, she just had this like heartbroken look on her face. She's sitting next to the fire. And, you know, the reason that she couldn't continue, she couldn't keep water down. And, you know, that is clearly an issue. And she couldn't keep water down, couldn't keep it down. So that was it. Like, that's a med drop. Because obviously the health and safety of the candidates is of prime importance. So, you know, it was heartbreaking for her. And it was hard to watch too, because it's not that this person isn't capable of doing it, but their bodies don't continue. You know, they hit that limit of where it's like, you know, your brain's saying keep going, but your body's saying, man, I got to go to the doctor, like, for real. So it's, you know, it's really sad.
That's one of the toughest things, because there isn't much out there on, I mean, just the event is so brutal and unending. Most of the other larger events out there, I mean, even 50 mile races, 100 mile races, there's a bit of it where when you're climbing, you're walking. If you go on Strava and check out some of the races people have done, you know, they break those up to make it more manageable, so that you're not sprinting the entire time. You're walking up the hills, you know, you're jogging down hills, and, you know, your pace isn't a sprint pace. It's a pace for these longer events. And that's what your body can handle. But GoRuck selection is essentially a sprint pretty much the entire time.
Bearing that in mind, it is. However, there are also opportunities for candidates to get a little bit of reprieve. And there are moments throughout selection where cadres say, you know what, sit down, refit, get water, get your ORS, you know, like, take a moment to, like, organize yourself. Now, is it a half hour? No, totally not. You have 3 minutes, go, right? But there are those moments where it's like it's metered and it's meted out in small doses, but it's there. But yeah, it's not like a tough or a heavy where there is like a flow to it, like where there's like, you know, points where the cadre say, okay, we're, you know, this is where we're going to beat you down, but then we're going to give you like a movement or something that's going to allow you to catch your breath. And then there's going to be high intensity. It's essentially like high intensity, high intensity, high intensity, high intensity, refit, high intensity, high intensity. So yeah, it's not a walk up the hill, run down the hill. It's run up the hill, run down the hill, maybe catch your breath at the top of the hill, but that's really about all you get.
That's one of the things, right, is that get going again, because the breaks are good, but your body loves to ease back into things, you know. Mm-hmm. If you're going for a long run and you end up stopping for 2 minutes to use the bathroom, to drink some water or something, you know, when you start going again, you don't start sprinting right away at the pace you were during your main run. You ease into it, and it's just those jolts. It's got to be tough.
Totally. And then at the 24-hour mark, they had an hour. So they had 1 hour to get food, to rest, like to address their feet. I think it was like called measures of care or something. I can't remember how much editor put it, but it was just essentially to take inventory of yourself, you know, do as best you can for whatever you need, and you know, you have an hour. And then getting back into it after that hour was brutal. The flow of the event is definitely not like any other. Like, even if you were to compare it to like an HTL or like a double heavy, like it's not even, the flow is not even remotely the same.
I can only imagine, you know, being someone down there and doing that. When you were, you know, you're out there shooting the event, so how much of the event did you end up shooting? Because the participants, you know, they don't get any sleep unless maybe they choose to sleep during that hour, but I'm guessing they're working on some other stuff and probably not spending that whole hour out. So were you in a similar boat? Did you shoot most of it? Did you take rest here and there?
So because Nick and I were both shooting stills, and we essentially had like the same capability as far as like transmitting images, we kind of flexed on and flexed off. I probably shot about, you know, half of it, a little more than half. You know, I was sleeping in other people's cars and stuff. I was kind of underprepared. I didn't really know, you know, how it would work, because I was under the, you know, we had a lot of different, we had conversations leading up to selection about how we were going to approach it and shoot it together. And in conjunction, there's also a video team there that was shooting. So I'm assuming there'll be some like really nice footage and stuff coming out of the event. But you know, I probably shot 24 to 30 hours of it. The last night when they did the long walk, I got a decent bit of sleep, simply because Nick was like, look, man, it's just, they're walking and it's dark out. So, you know, really being on your feet, you know, for the long walk and shooting that isn't really going to yield a ton. So I got a little more sleep during that event actually than I do for like an HTL, and I'm okay with that. Like, part of me says, you know what, don't be a lazy bastard, and you know, you should just be out. You shouldn't be missing anything. You know, you need to be, you know, shooting everything. And then the other part's like, well, you know, if I get a little bit of sleep though, I'm gonna be, you know, I'm gonna be on point more. I'm gonna be switched on more if I have a little bit of rest. So that's kind of a struggle, an internal struggle that I have, where it's like, I don't want to miss anything, but at the same time, I also want to make sure that I'm like sharp when I'm shooting.
Yeah, that you're taking the best pictures possible. And I mean, it's one of those things, right? Because if you're out for a couple hours for 6 hours sleeping, you miss those 6 hours of photography time. But if you're there shooting, then the next 12 or so might only yield half as many good photos or less, depending on composure, right, and everything, because of your exhaustion levels.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, I'm clearly not doing anywhere near the amount of work as the people in the events are doing that I'm shadowing. I wish that could like go without being said, but there's always going to be somebody who's like, oh, you're complaining about nothing, blah blah blah. It's like, I understand, like I know full well that the work that I'm doing is not as physically arduous as the folks who are doing events. But I have to stay sharp mentally, and I have to stay sharp, like, because this isn't like carrying a sandbag where it's like, okay, you know what, I'm with a group of people, I'm carrying a sandbag, I just have to put one foot in front of the other with all these other people. This is like, okay, like I have to actively search for photos, look for photos, look for moments. Like, I have to be sharp mentally. So clearly it's not as difficult as participating in an event. However, there still is like an aspect of being able to keep up, being able to get the movements in, being able to, you know, maneuver with these groups, and then also be on mentally to make the images. So like there is something to it. And finding another photographer or, you know, somebody else to do that would be somewhat difficult, you know, because a lot of people are like, oh, you're doing, no, yeah, no, you can't, you know, I'm not going to go out and do that. That's way too long. And I'm outside the entire time. And yeah, no, I can't do that. So, I mean, there's a little, you know, there's work involved, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not the cleanest place to shoot. It's not the easiest thing to shoot. It's relatively difficult in all aspects.
You know, I mean, I don't know how much of the feed that you saw, but you know, I was getting in and out of the water with them. You know, I had, you know, shoes full of sand. You know, I was grossly underprepared, and I was planning on being able to flex back to and from HQ, but that ended up not being the case. So I left my other ruck with like dry socks in it at HQ. So I had some pretty, my feet were pretty macerated by the time I was able to change. And not saying that the contestants, you know, like the candidates wouldn't be, like, I can only imagine how terrible their feet were. I mean, we saw the one picture of Patrick's feet he posted that were pretty gnarly. And, you know, I saw them getting their socks pulled off at HQ at Index, you know, and like they were smoked. But, you know, the other parts of the environment also affect everyone else who's out there. So like the video guys were getting in the water. Nick was getting in the water. Kadri were getting in the water. You know, it's not just, you know, the candidates that are having like feeling this other stuff, but the people around it are also feeling, you know, little doses of what they're feeling too, which is kind of, it's interesting because you can kind of extrapolate that and you go, man, you know, my feet are getting kind of fucked up, you know, cause they've been wet for a day straight. And it's like, I can't even imagine like how their feet are by being wet for just as long, but you know, way more mileage and way more weight.
No kidding. So that's kind of unfortunate that you didn't have your second ruck with you, but
it was just stupid. Like it was just one of those things where, you know, I learned and I mean, I'm fine. I mean, it's like, it's really no big deal. It's just me whining and me complaining, but it's just, you know, being ill prepared. So I'm glad that you know, there are a couple of moments when I'm really glad that I had some of the things in my kit that I had with me, but yeah, I should have just done what I always do and just, you know, had a pair of dry socks in my dry bag in my ruck, but I didn't. So that was my own damn fault.
So leading up to this year, there's been a lot of live coverage, a lot of videos and a lot of pictures for GoRuck selection. When you got down there to shoot the event, was there anything that was, you know, surprising to you that you might not have seen or known about before with the photo shown, or was it pretty much what you were expecting?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, the only thing that kind of like, you know, threw me throughout the event was the energy, was like being able to feel the energy. And you know, like, I don't know, like how much you subscribe to like the hippy dippy shit and like how much you believe in like the whole vibes thing and whatever. I feel like I'm relatively in tune with people and like feeling like their energy and being able to read their body language and stuff. And I can definitely, you know, especially like more so with people that I'm close with, but you know, I can feel energy. Again, I think that we all can to an extent. So, I mean, if you subscribe to that, cool. And if not, then I really don't give a shit. But, I could, like, the energy felt way different and that I wasn't expecting that. And the other thing that threw me off was the smell. Like, no joke. Like when they were crawling through that, what looked like a creek at first, but soon turned into a mud pit in that park, like right, you know, right after the 5 miler, like when they were crawling through that, man, the smell coming out of that was intense. And, you know, I had that mud on me, like, you know, I was down there pretty close to it with them. I mean, I didn't have my face in it, but you know, I was really close to the candidates, and man, that's the smell was really interesting. And that came in play, you know, a few times. Like we were out on the, I think it's called Dutton Island, and we were out there, and like, as soon as you could smell bug spray, it was like, oh man, like I need some of that. Like it was really just like, you could smell like the citronella from the, like the tiki torches and stuff. And like they had a bonfire going too. Like some of the, you know, past finishers had a bonfire going, and like you could smell like the fire. So it was really like all of the, these things that you can't experience through a screen. Right, you can't experience the mosquitoes, you can't experience the no-see-ums, like you can't experience the smell, like you can't experience like the exhaust from the cars running to light the class, you can't experience the dust in the air from them filling sandbags, you can't experience the smell from the mud. You know, there's all these, for lack of better terminology, like there's all these like 3D elements that are in it that you can't feel through a screen or smell or experience through a screen.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. because we, you know, we don't have smell-o-vision or whatever they're going to call it, but
yeah, it gives depth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that whole sense that we don't have for that, you know, mm-hmm. the sense of smell, the sense of touch, like having that mud on there, probably being caked in bug spray. And,
the bugs were brutal. It was, you know, it's essentially like marsh and swamp in that area. And like the mosquitoes were just prolific. I mean, we've seen some photos come across, you know, the Gorok Tough group, and just, you know, it was like arms just eaten up. And, you know, it was no different for the cadre or for Nick or me or any of the media crew, or, you know, everyone was just getting chewed up.
As if the event wasn't hard enough to begin with.
Yeah, dude, like the candidates, I mean, that, who knows, maybe they were, you know, maybe they were ghost walking enough to where they weren't really, you know, paying attention to it. But, you know, they were, you know, the bugs were brutal.
That's interesting that you, mentioned the energy there again, because it really just sounds like that Gorok selection has a unique energy to it. And like you said, even if people don't believe in an energy or anything, I think that, you know, just the way that you can read a room, like if you go to someone's, you know, birthday party or, you know, 21 run or something, you kind of feel the energy there different to if you just walked into like a funeral.
Correct. And that's precisely what it is. It's like a giant fucking GRT funeral. Is a GRT genocide is what selection is.
It's got a low pass rate.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it was, and some of it was like really hard. You know, even you spoke about how, you know, like what was it like when people dropped that had been in there for, you know, 30 hours. It was just as bad for the folks who didn't pass PT, you know, and it's heartbreaking. It's like nobody expects, like if you're signing up for selection, you have some idea of what you're signing up for. So Alex had never done 052 or 52. He had never done a Gorok event, right? But dude's like airborne, he's in the Army. He was in there for however many years. So he has experience with that type of environment, right? But he had not done a Gorok event. But it's like when you sign up for selection, you have an idea of what you're signing up for and what's required of you. So to go there and to be like, fuck, I'm gonna be the one, man. Like, I'm passing selection. I'm getting patched out. And you come in and you don't pass your PT test. Like, that's heartbreaking. So seeing, like, you know, I have a couple of photos. There's this one guy that came out. Dude looked like a Viking. Like, he must have been like 6'2", 6'3", you know, big guns, you know, long legs, like really muscular looking dude. Failed his PT test. Got performance dropped before it even started. And it's just like, you know, that's also heartbreaking because you spent all that cheddar, you spent all that time training, and you spent, you know, but you didn't do your due diligence to make sure that you could definitely, absolutely, positively pass that PT test. So you get rocked right in the beginning.
And that's the thing, right, is that it's so tough because not like they let someone through who does one less push-up just because they were close. It's a gate. And if you're not through that gate, then you're not getting in.
Dude, that, so you touched on, you know, you just said, you know, if that, you know, they miss one pushup, they're not getting, you know, they're not going to let them through. And they didn't. There were people who were performance dropped from PT by missing from one pushup or one sit up. No joke. Somebody was like the requisite was 65 sit ups, I believe. Somebody got 64. Nope. 55 pushups, 54. Nope. You're gone. And like that standard was upheld. One guy got really butthurt about it and decided that he was going to try to argue it with Jason. And that was not, like, Jason didn't have it. And he's like, look, standard's the standard. You know, my cadre know what they're doing and they're here to administer this. And if I just let you slide by because you say my cadre counted incorrectly, then, you know, then that pulls away from the standard and it ruins the integrity of the event. So they're like, no, like you had one less, it didn't matter. That's not the standard.
That's tough. And 55 pushups, 65 sit-ups, that's a decent a number, but it's obtainable, right? I'm just sitting here looking at it in 2 minutes. But we've talked about energy two or three times so far. And I just think I'm guessing, since I haven't been down there, I don't feel the energy, that doing the work there is a little bit different than doing it, you know, in your living room or in your garage.
Of course. But, you know, like, you know, another thing that, you know, was said by one of the cadre or Jason or somebody was, you know, if you're there and you're only able, and you know you can make that 65, but it's usually like as you get 67 or 68, you should probably be better prepared than that. You should be coming down being able to do 80, 90 in that time. Because if cadre don't count one or two because either your back is too low or your butt's in the air, or because your fingers aren't interlocked behind your head, or you don't come far enough up on your sit-up, like that shouldn't matter. You should be down there being like, okay, they didn't count two or three, no big deal. So, you know, essentially it was, look, man, if you're coming down here and the best that you've ever done was 68 over 65, then there might be an issue. Because the PT test is designed for the bare minimum.
I think everyone who I've talked to who has passed selection has been able to do, you know, well over that. They've been in the training up, they've been able to accomplish, you know, in the 90s for pushups.
That always seems to be the case. Because it's like that's the bare minimum. That's the indicator that they use, right? They say that's showing that like that base level of fitness with, you know, being designated by those tools, by the run, the pushups, and the sit-ups. There's no way I would ever make those standards right now. Like I'm not even trying to like pretend that I could, but from what I witnessed from like cadre and the candidates being there, like that standard is 100% upheld. So if you're thinking about doing selection 2.0 in 2021, don't go in thinking you can get away. Like you're, oh man, I hit the PT test one time. I got 65 and I got 55. Like really reevaluate that and go in with like more like I got 70 and 75 or 90 and 95.
Yeah. And again, not that I've done selection or you've done selection or anything like that, but I mean, just you've been there and, you know, witnessed it, and it's a hard number. You're not sliding through. Even if you go and argue with Jason, you're not sliding through.
No, if anything, if you go and argue with Jason, you're more likely to be escorted out.
Yeah, then you don't get to enjoy the after party. You get even less fun.
Totally. And it's like, sorry, man, you know, you wanted those beers and pizza afterward, but you were a dick, so you don't get that. Bye.
That's tough. I mean, it's, you know, expensive to get down there. It's expensive to sign up for the event. The training, just the amount of time you devote to training is expensive because you could have been, especially like you do freelance photography, right? So every hour that you spend training is 1 hour less that you're editing photos, that you're finding clients, that you're shooting. Like you're actively trading money for training time. So it's a lot invested.
Totally. And you know, there was a guy down there from Detroit. His name is John Grobel. He did team assessment with Vreeland, and they completed team assessment together. I think that's right. Is that right? Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
And so, like, nobody knew he was coming down. It was a total secret. Like, there's a crew up here called the Murder Squad, and that's like the Detroit, like the badass GRTs that are in Detroit. And you know, there's some, like, you know, a lot of them got their nucks. The cadre Dan Nucks in August when they did their third heavy with Dan. Like there's some like people who are like serious athletes and like really good GRTs and really good team members. So John didn't tell anybody aside from like Vreeland, I think. So I'm in the hotel and I'm going down to get some breakfast before I go to HQ, and like John's just chilling there eating breakfast by himself. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, good to see you. Like, you know, John, he's like, I'm trying it again. And he got through, like, you know, the pack unpack and pack your rucks. Like, he got through. He was like, you know, one of the first people that was just allowed to stand there while everybody else was, you know, participating in the shit show. He got through the push-ups and sit-ups, and his left leg went numb at the halfway point of the 5 miler, and he didn't get it in time. So like, that was heartbreaking. You know, like to see somebody that you know can perform have something happen, and when it's like been something that he had been working on, like that was tough, man. Like the weather was perfect. Like there was no issue, no opportunity for heat stroke, man. It was like overcast and like 70 degrees with the breeze on the ocean. Like it was like if you, it would be like ideal vacation weather when they got to do their run. So it was just really hard to see him like go down there, you know, and then have that dash. I mean, like, and he's a bad dude. Like, he's done a lot of stuff and he's a performer, and like, just, you know, something like that, it can happen. Just like not being able to keep water down can happen. Just like straining your shoulder can happen. Just like Alex tweaking his knee, you know, there's, it can happen.
No one expects your leg to go numb.
Yeah, no. So it was really sad. Like, I was like, you know, and I told him before the event got going, I'm like, look, man, I'm like, I can't talk to you during the event, and like, I can't have any interaction with you. But I'm like, look, like, if you happen to like look at me and see me looking at you or whatever, like, just know that I'm like silently screaming for you to fucking to destroy everything, and just like to fucking crush in the path. And it's just like one of those things where it's like, you want so much to see somebody you know succeed, it just gets ripped out from them because of something that they have really no control over.
Right. And we talked about that in the last podcast episode about, you know, rooting people on from the side.
Every single cadre that's there wants to see the candidate succeed. Every single one of them. And like what I think, like what goes in like my mind, like, if, you know, we all have like this little voice in the back of our head saying, they like, go do selection. You know, if you're a GRT, if you finished an event, you've got that voice that's in your head going, go do selection, you can do it, right? And it's in my mind, what I think you would have to do to really like get over the mind fuckery is just think that every time the cadre says they want you to fail, they're actually telling you they want you to succeed. Because every cadre there wants you to succeed. They want you to perform, and they want you to excel, and they want you to fucking dominate that event. They want you to, but they're just telling you otherwise.
It's a good way of looking at it.
I mean, it's hard on the cadre. Like, it's hard on them to continually, you know, look at this like Jason was saying, you know, he hates the event and loves the people. And that's because he hates going, you're not performing, you're doing terrible, you're horrible, hurry up, you're not moving fast enough, dominate that person who's in front of you. Like, they hate doing that because they care about the people and they care about the community.
And that's why I think a lot of them are, you know, really excited to see three finishers this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just excited about that. So we talked about, you know, energy at the event, how it was just, you know, it was rough for those people there. And it was kind mm-hmm. of a shocker to you when you got there, just how crazy mm-hmm. it was. How did that flip around when the event ended?
Oh, dude, it was elation. It was complete, it was so, like, I'm getting goosebumps just, like, thinking about it. Like, it's very emotive. And there was a photographer that I really, really admire, who's dead now. His name's Tim Hetherington. And he has this amazing body of work in conflict. And he has this book called Infidel. And it's about, the book is like based off of a tattoo of like one of the guys that he embedded with in Afghanistan. And he said that, you know, war and conflict are like the only times in our culture where men can like openly love one another, where it's acceptable for that in our culture, right? Because we have such machismo that surrounds men and masculinity, you know, where it's like a lot of times when you're like, yeah, man, I love you, brother. Like, that's tough to say for, you know, or for other guys to hear it or to be heard like in public, right? But at the end of selection, it kind of emulates that, where it's like, it's okay to like hang on to that hug for just like a second longer and to like celebrate that person, and for it to be like, you know, to call somebody brother and like really believe it and feel it, not just like, hey, what's up, brother? Like, you kind of like just like letting it, you know, just fly off your mouth. It's like something where like that, just like achieving that, like reaching that success and, you know, completing that and really having done that gives that little bit of leeway where it's like, it's okay to have that kind of like that emotive response.
I think that's a great way to describe it.
Like, do you think you're going to go up to Patrick and give that dude a hug on a regular day? you know what I mean? Like, you think you're just going to like walk up, they'd be like, hey man, oh man, how you doing? You know, you feeling good? Like, just walk up to give him a big hug. Hell no. Right? Not unless you're in his circle, right? But like, it gives that kind of like that opportunity to where it's like, it's handshakes and hugs at the end and everybody's happy and proud. And like, I have a photo of Mark and Fern, them hugging at the end, and like Fern's crying. You can see like a tear on her cheek and stuff, because the way that she dropped out, it was just bum luck, because she got hit, she got kicked in the head, and they were really concerned that she had a concussion because she was having a hard time like standing up and like staying straight. So they had to med drop her. So like, I think that they had some sort of, you know, they went and did it together. And like thinking that like, we're going to finish this together. We're doing it as a couple and it's going to be amazing. And I don't know them. So if I'm getting any of this information wrong, I'm sorry. But this is what I'm gathering from social and from what I've heard other people talking about. But like, I have a photo of them at the end where, you know, she's crying and they're hugging and like everybody's around them, the index and the American flag's out and everything. And it's like, it's super highly emotional and it's okay. And it's good. And it's like a relief.
Yeah, that was quite the story, you know, to come out of that event. I remember Jason was talking about it a bit on the live feed. Yeah, it just seems like it was just kind of a crazy accident. And then she's out.
Yeah, it was a freak thing. It was one of those things where you're not paying attention and you're like, you're putting your feet back for whatever reason, like you're getting down to do push-ups or something, and you just get a foot in the face. You know, it's a complete bummer. It's just one of those things where you have no control over it.
Yeah.
And then it takes you out of this thing that you've been preparing for a year or more.
Yep.
It's a heartbreaker, man. Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like being there, even though you weren't signed up for the event and participate in the event in that regard, I mean, it seems like it was a highly emotional experience. You know, it was just an amazing thing to be at. If you're given the opportunity to go back in, I mean, 2020, they say there's going to be no selection. There will be team assessment, but 2021 for selection 2.0, would you like to go shoot that?
Fuck yeah, absolutely. And you know, one thing that I'm really struggling with right now is like, I'm not in like super good shape. Like, I can keep up with an event. Like, I can keep up with a group on an event, and I'm okay. I mean, it's hard for me to get through sometimes and like catching up with if I'm having to run and everything. But one thing is like, I noticed that I missed something and it's driving me absolutely fucking crazy. When they were playing with the buckets, the pails of pain, as they were called, they were all like Home Depot buckets. Right. And it said like, more doing. And then it said like, fill dump repeat or something on it, or fill mix repeat or something like that. Like, I saw that afterward and I was like, damn it, like, why didn't I get like a photo of them with those buckets filling it up with water or dumping it out, you know, something that would narrate the story with what's on these buckets. And I missed that, and I was like, I'm just like super disappointed in myself for that. And I think a lot of it was just because like, I know that if I'm better physically, that I'll be able to approach events better and do a better job. So my thing is now is I'm really going to begin to work on getting myself better physically so I can bring that up mentally and like really be switched on the entire time so I can stay up longer. So that way I have better energy throughout the event. So that way I can pay attention, like pay, you know, put better attention and put more intent and mindfulness into my work when I'm shooting these events. So, you know, if I'm still shooting for GoRuck come June, I really, 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 really want to shoot team assessment. You know, like I said before, I really want to shoot Normandy, and I'm supposed to be, as far as I'm aware, I'm going to be going to shoot Bragg when that comes around. So I just want to make sure that I'm working on myself so that way I can be better at what I'm doing. So that way I can have better photos for everybody. And that way it's just like a kind of like a, a little weight off of my shoulders. So that way I know I'm doing a better job for everybody else.
I've seen those buckets. I know what you're talking about. And it's interesting because it's those things like that, the missed chances that haunt you, you know,
dude,
much longer.
We had just, horrible.
We just talked about that. You had sent 1,000 photos, 1,000 awesome photos from, you know, your camera to GoRuck during the event. Like, who knows how many extra you've sent afterwards when you pulled them off. But it's that those little opportunities like that, the missed ones that just stick with you for what feels like ever.
Dude, and you know, it's that, and that, but that's how you get better, right? So that, you know, it's on a different plane, but that's the same as, you know what, I went to selection and I blew my PT test. You're going to fucking remember that. So it's that internal desire to always do better, to do more, you know, to always do more better, not more better as in gooder, more to do more volume and do that volume and to have that volume be better. And, you know, I think that's something that in the GRT community, that's a very prevalent thing, because if it weren't, there wouldn't be people going to selection.
Right.
So that's kind of, you know, it's similar. I always want to be better at what I do. And when I have things like that, that I kind of latch onto and go, man, like, you know, you fucked up, you know, it's kind of self-policing, but it's also like self-motivating. When it's not, it's like, okay, here's the reason, you know, here's my motivation, here's my why, right? So that's what's going to help kind of propel me forward. And hopefully when I get out to team assessment, hopefully when I get out to Bragg, and hopefully when I get out to Selection 2.0, and hopefully when I get out to Normandy, you know, that I'm like, I'm better at my game.
I love it. We went before the event, through the event, the end of the event. Is there anything about GoRuck Selection? I mean, being there, you know, as someone on the side, but still very much in it, because you're so close to the participants, you know, but you have to stay out of their way. That's gotta be tough, right? Because you have to get there and get the good shots, but you're also a shadow.
Yeah. You know, I'm pretty accustomed to being in the mix, but being out of the way. I do the best that I can to not hold anybody up. Like, there was a moment I got brushed by one of Alex's feet, cause they were doing some leg lifts and stuff. And I was just, you know, I was looking for a certain shot, and I didn't, you know, hear the catcher tell him to put his feet up, and I got kind of brushed by it. And, you know, there's always that, you have to be highly situationally aware, and you just have to be paying attention, and you have to have an idea of what's going on. But you know, it's, you have to find a balance, you know, like kind of what we talked about last time about shadows and stuff. And I've had a conversation with another shadow who's made photos and stuff. Now, I don't know if he's made them for GoRuck, but he's shadowed events and stuff. And it's just, you know, you have to just be on, like, you have to be switched on. You have to be paying attention to where you're at, what's going on, what's happening. Cause yeah, man, like while they are on the beach at, like, you know, getting close to Endex, like I'm in the surf with them, you know, and Nick's in the surf with them. The video guys are in the surf with them, and we're all like really close. Like really close, you know, laying on the beach, like, you know, pushing your camera up at them as they're like, you know, crawling up the beach, you know, getting sand kicked at your camera. And, you know, I was worried one of my cameras like took a bath. So like full on submersion, like it was, you know, you just have to be aware.
It's an expensive bath.
Yeah. And you know, we can talk about, you know, we talked about gear last time. If you want to do a little gear spot this time, we can totally do that too, because I'm making a couple of changes, and I was also really surprised by Sony.
Yeah, let's hear it.
After the long, like during the long walk, after I was flexing off, so I was peeling off of my shift, quote unquote, as they were going on the long walk, and it started raining like pretty good. And it turned out that Jax was getting the kind of like the tail end of a tropical storm. And dude, the rain was intense, like really intense, like sideways rain and just like heavy, heavy rain, heavy wind. And the weather was just gnarly. So I get up the next morning. I'm getting, like, we're getting ready to head out. I was like, Mocha, I think Bo was there, Ricky V was there, a couple of the media crew, some of the, you know, Kling was there, Alex was there. We were all like walking down to the beach, and we're like, you know, we get outside and it's kind of drizzling. And we're like, okay, cool, not bad. And then we get like 25 yards from HQ and it starts to like rain, like somewhat heavily. So we all put our rain jackets on and we're walking by and we come up to the berm that goes to the beach. And man, like as soon as we crossed that berm, it just like came down hard. Like the rain like soaked through my ruck, like 0 seconds. Like it was just getting like pushed right through my ruck. Like it was just raining hard. And like it was to the point where the cadre and finishers, like previous selection finishers, like we were under the pier, kind of like huddled up a little bit because it was like really intense. So we turn around and then here come, you know, the three guys and we're like, well, you know, it's time to work. And I didn't have rain covers for my cameras. And I'm like, well, like, here we go. Like, I don't have a choice. So I keep a dry bag and I have that little Tenba BYOB9 that we talked about last time. So I grabbed my dry bag and I threw the Tenba inside the dry bag and bunched it up. And that worked pretty well. The Tenba was already a little damp. But I think it was just mostly because like the humidity and the air in addition to the rain. But that worked really well. And I was incredibly surprised with how well my cameras cleaned up. The surf was nuts. It was absolutely crazy. It's how Alex ended up tweaking his knee because the surf was coming in really hard and it swept him and he fell. And like, that's when he injured his knee. So, the cadre were also, you know, very mindful of it and he wasn't quitting and they also didn't want to like med drop him on hour 48. So they're, you know, making him still work, but just being mindful of his knee. And, you know, I was going in and out of the surf with them to get the photos and man, like it was pulling and it was raining hard and I could feel the sand in my cameras. Like I could feel them as I was like adjusting for exposure and aperture and everything, like I could feel the sand just grinding in it. And I'm really, really, really impressed with their water and dust sealing in those Sony bodies.
And that was the A7 III?
Yep, A7 IIIs. And I took them and I went to while my cards were ingesting when I was working on getting the photos in, I went over to the Publix, it's by HQ, and grabbed a 5-pound bag of rice and I did the old bag of rice trick and threw my cameras and a couple of my lenses and a couple bags of rice. And then once I got home, got the vacuum and a toothbrush out and cleaned them all up in there. Seems like they're good to go.
So you're using the A7 IIIs and that seemed to be good for the weather. For your lenses, mm-hmm. Was there a go-to lens you had or was there a lens that you wish you had bought or brought?
There's always a lens that I wish I had. Because it's just part of being
the world of photography. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I use the same setup I did for 9/11. I don't like shooting long glass at all. I have a 7200. It's an F4. So I tend not to use it because it's an F4. Cause it's really slow. But I just don't like shooting long. Like the majority of the photos that I make are on the camera that I have my wide lens on. I shoot with two camera bodies. Generally, it's either my 28 mil f2 on my wide camera, and then my normal or telephoto will be like my 55 millimeter or my 85 millimeter. While I was on the beach, there was no way I was going to even attempt switching lenses, so I had my 28 and my 55, and then I was just, you know, working with those. I couldn't take them off. Like that would have been guaranteed water in my camera if I wanted to swap.
Right. At some point you're committed when the weather's like that.
Yeah. I took toothpicks and I was taking toothpicks and getting salt out of the weather sealing on my cameras. Like I could see like on the mount on the camera body, like you could see salt lines on it.
That's unbelievable. That's
so like, it was, yeah, I was really, really worried. I had an assignment for the Associated Press on Tuesday that I was going to shoot. I had a couple of I had a couple of events that I was, a couple of weddings I was supposed to shoot, but that unwound. It was for a production company that has some shows on Netflix that I was going to be shooting, but they decided they didn't want to agree to my rates. But at the time I didn't know that. So I had like these events coming up, and I have a wedding, I have a GRT wedding this weekend that I'm shooting. So it's like, I was really concerned, and I'm like just worried about it the entire time, and just did the rice bag trick and it worked. So they seem to be working and working very well. So I'm very impressed by their weather and dust sealing.
Me too. I mean, from that story and then from personal experience, nothing that crazy, but I haven't had any issues. And
yeah, you know, if you're outside in a light downpour, you're fine. Like, I don't think you really have anything to worry about. Like, it's good quality stuff. I really, like, I was reading about the A92 that's just released.
Yep.
And supposedly the weather and dust sealing has been improved on top of that already. So someday when I hit the big leagues, I'll get a couple of A92s.
It's an expensive ticket to get into the big leagues.
Dude, yes, it's a very expensive ticket to get into the big league. And then two, I'm gonna be, I think, nixing the BYOB 9 and getting a different little insert. So I'm going to do Ton Tavern and in Philly, and I think I'm actually going to be ordering the BYOB 9 DSLR or SLR, and it kind of like opens flat, and there's more space in it because for Ton, I'm not even getting a hotel. I'm essentially flying in a few hours before the event. I'm probably going to hang out at Starbucks or something for a couple hours and hopefully link up with Cadre ahead of time, shoot the event. And then I'm hopping on a flight at 11:30 the next morning. So I don't have like the need to like bring a bunch of clothes and all that, but I don't like to carry my cameras outside of the bag when I'm just like traveling. I have them out all the time when I'm shooting. So like that case will give me a little more room for my camera gear. So that way I can get everything like packed in there, have a little bit of extra space when I'm shooting. And then I can just pack them back up and get on the plane again.
That'll be perfect.
Yeah.
You still rocking the 21-liter GR1, or are you going to bring the 26 for that?
Oh, that's another thing. I'm really disappointed. This really saddens me, but my GR0 is just not going to make it anymore for shadowing events. I just have too much stuff that I carry with me that takes up too much volume, especially once it gets into cold weather. Once I get into serious cold weather stuff, I'm probably going to be taking my GR2. But the GR0 has been retired from shadowing. So there's just not, it's just too stuffed. It's too full. And it's just like, you know, it also doesn't help that like when you go to HQ, you end up buying shit. whenever I go do this stuff, I'm like, man, I should make sure that I go down and have like, wherever I go, I need to make sure that I have like extra room in my luggage. Especially if I link up with anybody from HQ or whatever. But yeah, the GR0 is being retired as a shadowing bag. It's going to be my 26-liter GR1 from now on. I love that bag, man, but I think it's time for just to keep it as like a dedicated EDC or rucking bag or something. So
I've got the Heritage GR1 that I've loved to shoot out of. Mm-hmm. It looks clean. It's a well-built bag, and it looks mm-hmm. professional. So it's really nice to bring and shoot out of, but I'm worried as well that, you know, they just released the 21 liter. That was the only version. So if it will ever get to the point where
it's too small.
Yep.
It's like, people are going to say like, oh, well, it's just 5 liters. It's like, yeah, man, 5 liters makes a difference.
It's an extra 25% a bag. It's like you made an extra 1/4 more.
It's a significant difference. And I'm kind of like wondering how I shadowed with it before when I had Canon gear, because all that shit was like way bigger. It's like, how did I do that? Like, was it just like stuffed and like just full? Like, I don't understand like how I did it then. Like, I can't remember how I did that, but yeah, I'm sad about it, but I'm not like, I'm really stoked that I have this new, my new GR1. And I really want to see if I can find an American-made Rucker 25-liter. If there's one floating around somewhere, I'd really like to get a hold of one of those.
For camera gear or for training?
For training. Just simply so I can, cause I just got the ruck plates. So simply I can just toss a plate in it and just leave it in there and not have to do the ruck shuffle.
Right. Right.
I'm super happy cause I just got, my wife, I've been trying to get her to, she enjoys rucking too. And we've been trying to do more of it together, but she hasn't had like a solid for rucking. I mean, we have like a 5.11 for like a rush 12 and it's okay. And now I'm going to sound like some go ruck elitist snob, but fucking whatever. If you think that you can pound sand, they make high quality shit. I found a really nice, they at HQ, they were like, they had a bunch of rucks that are all marked down. So I found a really nice, Echo that's Java, the Java colorway. So I got that for the wife. So, and it holds the 20-pound plate perfectly. So that's going to be her new rig.
That is sweet. Good find. Just a perk on going down to shoot the event.
I saw that and I was like, oh, I'm like, can you guys like, I want to buy this right now. They're like, there's nobody here that runs like Square or whatever. I'm like, well, we need to do something so that way somebody else doesn't buy this because this is, I'm taking this ruck home.
No one accepts money. So that's tough.
Oh, yeah, right. You guys can't take the Square right now? I think I'm just going to have to walk out the door with it. Thanks. Yep. So the last time we spoke, you know, I said that doing these events when I'm like making photos of people doing this and when I'm making photos of people that are excelling in environments and conditions that are generally adverse, like I feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be. And when I was shooting Selection, like this is something that I've been wanting to do for years. And I really thought that there was like no hope of doing it. But, you know, I continued to work at, you know, my craft outside of the Go Ruck universe. And then, you know, this last week I found myself there doing exactly that. And, you know, like that's like my place to be. And it was really just like a surreal experience being able to be there and to witness it like firsthand and feel everything and smell everything and just witness like these amazing people, like this amazing community, both, you know, participate and dominate the event, and then to also see this incredible outpouring of support and love from the community behind everyone. And it's not just, you know, they say, like, you know, Selection is the individual event for Go Ruck. And if you really look at everything, it's not. It's an event that's put on by a group of, you know, consummate professionals who have lived the life and who put a lot of time and effort into it. And the people who participate in it maybe participating as individual candidates, but have worked with other people, with other people in the community to get there. And then they have the people who are surrounding them, even if it's people that they don't know, and really trying to like push them and elevate them and boost them up. So it's, they say like it's this individual event, but really it's a community event where we get to witness like the best of our community, you know, work really hard and to lift themselves up and to be held up by the community because of their phenomenal effort and their phenomenal feat of completing Go Ruck Selection.
It's a great way to wrap it up. I'm really thankful that Go Ruck sent you down there to shoot the event because, you know, like you were saying,
you and me both.
Yeah. I mean, the pictures that came out of it were amazing, and without you being there, we wouldn't have had the ones you took. So thank you for taking the time to go down there, and thank you to Go Ruck for making that happen.
Yeah, thanks, Go Ruck. And hey, you know, thank you to everybody in the Tough page who has been making amazing memes. Thank you. Because, dude, as soon as, like, it was halfway through, maybe a little more, and after they did like the pendulum drags, those like just like the 2x4s with the sandbags strapped onto them, and the Go Ruck Jesus like paint penance for your sins or whatever, like the patch or whatever like, that somebody designed. Oh my God! Like we had such good laughs, and like even the cadre saw it, and behind the scenes, the cadre are just like, holy shit, this is amazing. Like, there was like a lot of reverie around it. So, you know, thank you to all of the amazing, wonderful GRTs out there who are building these beautiful memes from photos that I was creating.
Thank you so much for downloading the All Day Rock Off podcast. Thank you so much for the support. I really, really hope you enjoyed this episode with Tim Galloway, where we talked about GORC Selection Class 021. If you want links to anything we talked about, you can always hit up the show notes, alldayruckoff.com/127, since this is the 127th episode of the podcast. We've got links to all the pictures he took, the GORC posts, the live feed that GORC had for the event, everything that you need for GORC Selection Class 021. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to support the All Day Rock Off podcast, you can always support it through leaving reviews on either Apple Podcasts or on Facebook. You can head on over to the All Day Rock Off online store at alldayruckoff.com/store and make a purchase. Or you can support through Patreon, patreon.com/alldayruckoff, and you get a couple extra bonuses for doing it that way. In this episode, I do want to give a special thank you to Brent for supporting through Patreon. Really, really appreciate that. It means a lot. Thank you. And also, thank you for downloading this episode. Truly appreciate that as well. I can't wait to talk to you again next week. Got a great episode lined up. I really, really think you're going to enjoy it. As always, don't forget, attitude is everything. Keep yours positive and drink hard, rock harder.